first and then.
And now you go back to full screen. Or just your screen.
But I need to pull up my board agenda first. Or something.
Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Jeff.
Morning. Okay. So I think we have everybody. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Thank you all for being here today. I thought we'd start with the Pledge of Allegiance since we have our flag ready for us. So,
Andy, yes.
All right, we have to stand, I guess. All right. I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America. And to the republic
for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So I believe the first item is a roll call.
Or chocolate.
Bill Cover.
Present.
Jeff Jones. Jeff Jones, I know you're there. Bruce Utter.
Present.
I'm here.
Andy Rich.
Here.
Sharon Tobias.
Here.
John Dashner.
He's here. He's...
Yeah. And Dan he's Crosby here. Is absent.
Great. So I believe the next item is public comment. I didn't see any members of the public in the audience. So I'm going to move on unless somebody says something. So the next item is a consent calendar. We had the minutes sent out, an explanation of the financials. And then the water Sorry. Production, consumption, and usage. So if somebody wants to discuss anything that's on the consent calendar, we can pull it out, or we can make a motion to approve the consent calendar. Does anybody?
I move that we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
That's Bruce. Okay, great. So I think we vote, right?
Yes, we do.
Yes. All right. So all in favor of approving the consent calendar?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Okay, it's approved. So the next item is a general manager report.
Okay.
I think.
Yes.
So can we, everybody, mute themselves while people are speaking so that way I'll mute myself.
So first thing I have in the general manager report is just a report on the emergency repair that we had to do. I have pictures of the three major areas that Kathy will pull up here. Mainly it was Patricia, Shirley, and Linda were the three major spots. Patricia had two large spots. This is pictures of Shirley. You can see where the gravel in the ditch, the gravel had pushed its way into the ditch, filled in the ditch, and then now was starting to undercut the road where our pipe was at. It started from the top of Shirley, went basically all the way down to Patricia. That we cleaned out and then replaced with a class two base road base. Instead of the class one that was in there, there's pictures of it finished and completed with the new ditch, not that one, the one before. That's it, completed with the new ditch and with the class two road base in place. Yes, right there. So now the ditch has been remade. We put a swell in that, so the water will keep running down it. This last storm, we had no damages anywhere. Going forward, I think the next ones that you're going to see is off of Patricia. Yeah. So Patricia, here's one of the culverts. That was basically what had caused a lot of the issues, is that the county requires the homeowners to maintain their culverts, and no homeowners do, which, I mean, that's most people throughout the entire county don't. So it they clogged up. Nonetheless, there's one, it fully clogged up, sent all the water out and around the culverts, and then continued to eat out our gravel. In this picture there, you can actually see where the water had crossed that driveway and made that rock line and the pine needle line. That's where it originally was. So we cleaned out those couple culverts and then replaced the gravel in there. That one's just a culvert. This was one where the homeowner had that bare box was placed in the ditch, and that's what had clogged the ditch. That one, that wooden one there, the homeowner should have never, the county or homeowner should have never placed a bare box in the ditch. So as you can see, the gravel came down, clogged up that culvert, and then continued down Patricia, carving out the rest of the gravel that was there in the pipe. That's same, just below that same spot, that's what carved out below that bare box. So we ended up removing that gravel and cleaning out the ditch and placing back the better class two road base. Going forward, you should see the repairs themselves. That was one of the worst ones right there. You could actually see pipe right there in the dark spot on the edge of the pavement. And that's more damage on Patricia. That's that original culvert that you saw that I said was clogged up. That was clogged up with just mud and debris. And that was the first one that was clogged up at the top of Patricia. And then that would be the finished product, pictures of the finishing, where we removed the gravel, replaced what was trenched out. And you can actually see the ditch that we formed there. So we tried to form the ditch, and then the guys are coming back and putting some angled rock dams in to keep that water pushed against the bank and not against our rock. That's another finished product. And that's another finished product. That was the original culvert, believe it or not, down there. It was buried under about 3 to 4 feet of dirt, and that was what caused the top end of Patricia to start failing. And that's a finished product on Patricia as well. That would be right there. That's the picture, that G5 box earlier that you saw that was almost eaten out of the pavement, is now completely fixed and filled in. Linda, there was actually spots where you could see the tear tape. I believe it's the second or third picture in here. You're going to see a picture of the tear tape, which is sitting anywhere right there. That bright blue shiny piece down in the bottom, that means the pipe is right below it. So that's where it had carved that out, coming out of a culvert right below it. And so we did the same thing on Linda, pulled out the bad road base that wasn't holding up and put in a stronger road base. And there should be finished pictures there of Linda. Linda was one of the worst spots because it sent all the gravel out into the road. This was a finished product where we reshaped the ditch and put in the harder, more compacted road base on the edge of the road. And there's another picture of Linda, the lower part. So in all, the repair took 3 days and almost 140 yards of road base. So it was almost twice as much road base as the math put in, but that was expected. And it was an extra day of work where I thought it would only be two. So the total is somewhere about $18,000 instead of the 11 that I had sent out in an email earlier.
So Tyler, is this going to be an ongoing issue that we have for ever and a day?
These spots, this is the second time this has happened since the end of the project. The first time it was still under warranty, so it was covered and they replaced it, but they replaced it with the same class one road base. So that's why we removed that class one road base and put in a class two that compacts harder, sets up a lot better. We're going to monitor these. We have six different spots that we need to monitor continuously during these storms, especially when we know it's going to be something of the atmospheric river that had came, and that was when this had happened. So the guys will be monitoring those ditches and those culverts and making sure that they stay clear so the spots won't continue to have that. Most spots that it had the issues is where the hills get steep. So if the water wasn't coming off and it was, or staying in the ditch, it was coming out in the road, and it was where the hills were steeper. So obviously it gained speed and then did damage. In hope, this would be the last time we're going to have to do this. That's why we're going to add in the check dams and the diversions to help push the water away from those spots.
So, Tyler, we wouldn't consider any of this poor workmanship, or was it just a bad choice of materials or what?
Bad choice of material. There was nothing in the workmanship defect. They put it in. It passed compaction per NV5 and was approved by the county through NV5 and us. So the product is failing. It was it really was just not a great road base that should have been put in the ditch lines. It would work out good if it was, say, 3 more feet in the road and water was never going to touch that road base, because when it's dry, it's hard like cement. But as soon as it gets wet, we can run a garden hose on it and it melts like snow. It's got a lot of the fines in it are sand instead of clay. So the class two road base had more clay in it, and as we pack it, it turns solid. So hopefully this will stop.
Is it likely that this is going to happen in other places, or since we've got through the last storm, do we feel confident that what we've got is going to work?
I feel confident what we have is going to work, and it's only in these six areas that I have, three being that got damaged fairly bad, but it was pretty much the same areas. Castlewood, Shirley, two areas on Patricia, one spot on Moran, and one on Linda. They were the same ones that happened, was it a year ago when we had snow? We had about 3 feet of snow, and then it rained on top of that snow, and then we had a bunch of runoff underneath the snow berms, and it ate out all our gravel and put it out in the roads. That luckily, like I said, was under warranty, so they fixed that for free. This time it is no longer under warranty and is not a workmanship defect.
Tyler, you might have somebody in your crew take a look at the ditch opposite our home. There's some erosion. The county came by with but there is some erosion under the roadway itself, probably should be looked at.
Yeah, we have numerous small areas that the guys are supposed to go around with the trailer and that same class two road base and pack in those areas and fix any G5s that were eaten out. But they were going to do that, considering that Mazingo was costing us $4,000 plus a day. I wasn't going to use them as minimal as possible. I was going to have them around, because the guys can go around and do what you're saying, Andy. They were supposed to have gone in by your house. That was one of the spots that we knew of that was pretty bad as far of where the county had came by and cleaned it up. The county had came in here and let me know where they had found spots as well.
Tyler, if these repairs are not sufficient, what's the next step? What's beyond class two?
Class two would be it's about the best. After that, we'd have to slurry the ditch, which would be putting basically cement over the top of the gravel that's there. We can put in some more riffraff, which is basically like a 6-inch rock, and that would help do the diversion dams and slow the water down as it's coming down the ditch. That was all that was recommended to me by the county. They also have a couple other products we can add to the road base that'll help it set up similar to cement.
And are those expenses that we ought to be preparing for, do you think?
As of right now, I'm going to have to say no, just because of the last storm we had, it did absolutely nothing to the new areas. So right now it's working. So we're going to keep going with it. The guys are going to monitor it. But I would really hope that we're not going to have to replace very much more large portions of road base. Road base and the time that it takes to put it back in is not cheap. So is there any other?
Just the law. So our liability is, there's no cap on our liability for this, or in other words, this is forever.
Well, it's our pipe to maintain. The ditch itself is supposed to be maintained by the county, and the culverts are supposed to be maintained by the homeowners. You know, I don't want to point fingers, but it definitely, there were numerous homeowners that didn't maintain their ditch, and that's, or their culvert. That's what clogged and caused the problem. The one on Moran, we found where one homeowner stuffed a bucket in the upper end of it because he didn't want skunks going in his culvert. So that caused the big problem on Moran.
Well, should we send a memo to the homeowners association and explain?
In the bubbler and on our website, I'm going to start promoting the fact that the homeowners need to care for their culverts, and that this is going to be an ongoing situation if them and the county doesn't take care of the ditches.
Well, we should. Well, I think that's a great idea. I think, though, a formal letter to the homeowners association, the bear box is kind of, I mean, I think if you send it to we should send some official memorandum to the homeowners and explain what happened, and still do the bubbler and all that, but privately maybe. Anyway, it's up to the board, but I mean, I would say we should look at some formal letter, because if there's no cap on our liability, then, you know, forever is a long time, right?
Correct.
And then it's also costed, you know, eventually it goes back to the homeowners. So I think a letter to them if we feel like they're not paying attention. I mean, put in anybody that blocks a drainage ditch, there should be some type of reprimand, right? Some penalty, right?
I mean, yes, but basically we would have to turn them into the county, and the county would come out, and if you've seen the signs that they stick in the ditch, they give them a notice to correct and give them a timeline to fix whatever's in the ditch.
Right. Okay, I agree. So anyway, just to throw it out, does anybody think we should send a letter to the homeowners, or am I the only one that says that?
Do you mean the actual homeowner or the association?
The association. The homeowner association, whoever's in charge of that. And
I'll just make two comments here. As an ex-member of the homeowner association, we often told people that they're responsible for their culverts. And so that's one comment. The second comment is, opposite my house, I have to say the guys did a pretty good job of maintaining their culvert under their driveway, but that storm is what blocked it. And so unless you're out there in the rain digging out the gravel, they had no chance to do what they're supposed to do.
Well, I agree with Bill. I think, you know, the question in my mind is, you know, who's responsible for, you know, communicating about the culverts? Is it the homeowners association, or is it the water companies? So I think whatever letter we think should be sent out, it should be coordinated with the HOA.
You can do both. I mean, both the HOA and the water company can do it.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the trash can or wherever it was, and then the bear box, because that's, I mean, I agree that there's a tree fell on the side of my house. That's, you know, that was from a storm, right? I'm not, you know, I can't do anything about it. So, you know, a massive storm that plugs up something that's a different bucket I'm thinking of than like just negligent behavior. So that's why I think that's what I'm talking about. But Bruce made a good point. So anyway.
Well, I think the issue is bigger than the sort of ad hoc bucket in the culvert or the bare box in the ditch. I know on my street, there are very few people that clean out their culverts, and I think most of them are plugged.
So Tyler, can you send a letter to the HOA?
Yeah, I'll contact Tony and then we'll send a letter over to him, something they can send out to the shareholders, and then we as well will send something out.
Okay. Yeah, I think a good reminder that, you know, we have to maintain our pipelines and protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. Thank you for the report. I liked all the pictures.
You're welcome. The other we have was in the budget, we were trying to budget and we had talked about the driveway that needs repairing at the treatment plant. I got two bids from Cooper. One was for the rear area that needs to, and we do have some pictures of this too. So this is the main driveway going in to the treatment plant. And you can see how it's checked up and where we've had to do patches and repairs before. That ugly little patch in the middle of that square had sunk almost a foot. So we had filled that in with more asphalt and had to basically do that with a cold mix patch. You can buy them by 50-pound bags at the hardware store. The next picture would be more of the driveway, I believe. Yeah, so there's the upper part of the driveway outside the gate, and you can see how it's broken up and starting to fall apart. That's also a sinkhole in the middle right there close to the camera. And then the back area, the parking area, this was the other one we had bid on. This is where it's all coming apart, and this is where we plow and push up to that fence. So that's where mainly Billy was concerned that within this year or the next, he's going to end up peeling up that asphalt and coming out of there as he's plowing. I think there's one more. That's also the parking area right next to where I took the other picture. So that's just kind of showing that entire parking area is falling apart. The first bit
like all this looks ahead. Like all the streets in Blue Lake Springs.
Correct. It does. I couldn't tell you when the last time that it was paved. They paved in front of the treatment plant where they replaced the piping when we did the project and redid the piping coming into the treatment plant. But that was the only place they paved, and then the cuts of where they put pipe. So we had I had Cooper come out and bid on just doing the back area where it's falling apart, and it was bidded at $10,850. That's to saw cut, remove, compact, and then repave that back area. The other bid I had them do was the entire driveway and that back area, and that came to $55,480. Quite a large difference in price. But we do need to repair at least that back area. Eventually, the entire driveway is going to need to be resealed, replaced. However, I'm not an asphalt guy, so I don't know exactly how they would go about replacing something that's that damaged. Probably would be removal, I believe, is what Billy was saying he needed to do. Billy Cooper, removal and put back all new asphalt. So those were the two bids that I had, and that's what I would be trying to ask you guys for today, would be to put this on for next year's budget to be able to pave that small back area or the entire length of the driveway.
Any questions?
Just to be clear, it's one or the other, not both.
No, the large, the $55,480 is both, is the entire, that's the back parking area, the driveway going up, and then it goes around the shipping container a little bit as well. Those areas would be repaved completely. The the 1085, that would be just repaving the lower area around the treatment plant.
And this is to be done in the spring?
Correct. Unless our winter allowed it, but I believe the temperature has to be somewhere almost 60 degrees outside for them to be able to asphalt and have it hold.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
So are there any opportunities to have this competitively bid? Are there any asphalt companies down in Angels Camp or Sonora or Jackson?
The only other one I know of is Ken's Asphalt, and I've never heard a lot of high talk about them. I don't know of any others in the area. There is an Adams Asphalt. He was a worker from Ken's that had left and tried to branch out on his own. So he's basically a one-man crew. I could have Ken's come in and give us another bid if that's what the board would like.
I've watched Ken do my neighbor's driveway and was certainly not impressed. He even put his advertising sign in upside down. So I was not impressed with Ken. Cooper's got a great reputation.
Yeah, he's got a great reputation, but he also knows he's the only game in town and charges accordingly.
Of course, just like Comcast.
If we don't spend the $55,000 now, does it just get more expensive if we wait? Well, aside from inflation, of course, but does further damage make it more expensive?
No, because he's just going to end up with the $55,000. If I read the bid over correctly, he's going to be removing everything and starting from scratch. So it's not going to cost us more except for inflation or the cost of the asphalt if it goes up.
Thanks.
Billy, Tyler, what's your feeling about it, doing the patch job for $11,000? Is that just looking for more trouble later?
No, the patch job, he's going to actually redo that entire back area. So it'll be brand new asphalt. That'll be where we're finishing off plowing and shoving it against the fences. It's where the plow hits the ground a lot and does a lot of grinding on that asphalt. It should be good if he puts in all new asphalt. I wouldn't see a problem there with anything peeling up.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other alternatives, like putting a seal coat, how you see driveways get coated? I know that would just be like a temporary band-aid, but
he expressed that seal coating it, especially in those really bad areas, was going to do nothing. He'd have to have so much crack sealer at every one of those cracks and then put sealer over the top that he said it would run up the price to where you'd be up in that $50,000 range just trying to seal coat it. Because of the labor, they'd have to come along, scrape all the sand out of each crack, fill it with this heavy goop. Then they come back and do the sealer over the top of that. So Billy said with the labor alone, it was going to run up the price quite a bit. So that's why we asked them for what paving would cost then.
I think given the $55,000 price tag, which is yes, obviously significant, it would be or behoove us to try to see what other general contractors are that do paving, in Sonora, Angels Camp, Copperopolis. I know these guys travel all over Northern California to get their jobs, but I think we owe it to ourselves to understand whether $55,000 is reasonable or usurious.
It has been expected in the past, as when we asked Dave about it, that it would run somewhere in the $50,000 range. It is 11,000 square feet of paving. So if you ever have been to the treatment plant and you come down the driveway and then into the parking area, it is a very large area. So I'll get more bids and we can see what other people will give us as a number, but I'm expecting it to be somewhere in that $5,000 range. Cooper might not be, or 50, sorry. Cooper might be 55 and the next guy could be 50. but at travel expenses and everything else coming from somebody from an outside area, it could easily run up the price to similar to what Cooper has here.
So I agree Cooper with Andy. Well, I kind of agree with Andy. We should try to get three may be too many, but if you can get, at least get one other bid.
I don't think we have three pavers within three counties.
Well, can we get at least one more bid? Or
yeah, I'll call Ken's, and then I'll see if I can get a hold of Adam, which I know he's just a lone guy. But I'll get a hold of Adam and see if I can get another bid from him, so that way we have three different bids.
Right. I mean, just from the board's point of view, we have to do our due diligence on the
correct,
you know, on the call. So it's not a criticism to you, but anyway, we just need more than one. It would be more comfortable voting on it.
Yeah, Tyler, you might also try calling the county and see who they might recommend, because they probably have a list of contractors that do asphalt.
Did Cooper do all the asphalt during our project?
No, I believe it was George Reed hired from Mazingo. Hmm. That's who came and did Blue Lake Springs Drive after Mazingo had, or county didn't approve what Mazingo had originally put in. George Reed came back and did the other. During the project, though, I believe Mazingo does have their own small paving.
Okay. Does George Reed do bids? Do you think he would?
I can see if George Reed would come up and do the driveway. George Reed is more of roads, county roads, highways. They do a lot larger projects, but I can see if they would be willing to bid on the treatment plant.
Yeah.
Maybe even get if someone would give us an average square foot price. We're looking at a bid right now of about $5 a square foot to remove and replace. Is that an average price for an average size job? I mean, maybe another contractor could even give us a quick estimate on that, that we could. I certainly agree that if we can possibly get a second bid, we ought to.
Mm-hmm.
So if this work is going to begin in the spring, it sounds like we probably have to make a decision by the February meeting. Is that right? Actually, January meeting.
Sometime right there after the first of the year in that meeting, if we could approve it there, that'd be great. But if I'll get these other bids for you guys and get them sent over, I can even email them to you and we can have an interim meeting. So that way we can finalize the budget, because we have to finalize the budget for next year before the end of the year.
Apparently I don't have any volume. I've tried to bring up a couple of issues. You asked about.
Did somebody say something?
Yeah, John is in the office and he's having trouble with his volume.
You got to unmute it or be quiet and talk.
There you go.
May I make a suggestion? I've not had any volume previous to this. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a gentleman, it's called GNS Paving out of Oakley, California. He did paving in the Blue Lake Springs area this spring or summer. And also he did the big parking lot at Big Trees Park. And I will gladly furnish Mr. Mayo his phone number so you can get an extra bid. And he was very competitive with Mr. Cooper and others.
Great. That sounds like a great idea. Thank you. So it looks like Tyler is going to get a couple more bids from GMS Paving and Ken's or George Reed and see what kind of information we can get, along with the square footage, average square footage price, if we can get that too. Anything else? Sorry.
No, that's all I had on the paving. Just the next I have are, for the manager's report here, is regarding this CL17 analyzers. CL17 analyzers analyze the chlorine that is in the tanks and what we're putting out into the tanks. Both have recently gone down. They're old, and as I contacted CL17 or Hawk, sorry, they said that the ones that we have are now obsolete. What parts they have is all they will ever have for them. So the day that the parts don't, they don't have a computer board for it, they will not be able to repair it. So I got quotes for the repair, quotes for the replacement, and we have to have two of them. That is per the state. So right now we don't have any of them. So we need to get on this and at least get one repaired or replaced as soon as possible. The quote you're seeing here is for the repair and the travel for them to come. The repair cost is only included as you see there, is one major repair or two minor repairs and the routine maintenance. If they find that there's more than one major repair or two minor repairs, the cost will go up from that $1,359 per CL17 analyzer. So the repair for them to come out, I have repair would be about $3,271. To purchase one and repair one would cost about $6,522. And to purchase two new ones, it would cost about $7,500. So we need to go forward with either repairing, trying to repair both of them, or repair one, or replace both.
So Tyler, did you get a, when you buy new ones, do they have a maintenance schedule? And so you buy kind of a package?
Yes, they have a maintenance schedule. I believe it's once a year they come out, replace the tubing. The guys maintenance it once a month with the cleaning and the cleaning of the analyzer chemicals that go into it. So the guys do their own routine maintenance. Plus we have one annual maintenance that Hawk does on the CL17 analyzers.
So our guys are trained to do maintenance on the, will be trained to do maintenance on the new one.
Yeah. The new ones are almost identical. They're just look fancier because they're not from the 90s.
Well, they have updated software, right? I mean, all that stuff.
Yeah, there's no software that goes with it. It's just a small computer board. It analyzes the water that we're making. It runs through it, analyzes it through a color meter, and the color meter tells us how much chlorine is going out in the tank.
So it's just like a spectrophotometer, right?
Correct.
All right, so...
And then it's hooked into our SCADA, which is just a 420 milliamp output. You see that in the controller here. The new ones do not have a controller inside. Our old ones do have a controller inside. So there will be the one-time purchase of the 20. Go back down, Kathy. Scroll back down.
So the calibration would be the only technical issue. So when you switch instruments, if they're not calibrated, you may get a reading that's a lot different than what you've had before.
Well, Hawk would come install it and calibrate it. That wouldn't be done by us.
Okay.
What's the warranty on a repair?
There is no warranty on the repair.
What is the general life expectancy of this product?
The old ones are now obsolete, so I would say 10, 20 years.
It used to be about 20, 25 years.
Okay.
At least. Overall, it would be beneficial to purchase the new one that has a good life expectancy and has availability of repair when needed.
Well, yeah. We're almost in a situation where we're obligated to upgrade to the new one because if, something happens unexpectedly, then you're kind of out of luck there, right? So there's no temporary machine that you can replace the old one with.
No.
So no, we are
required to have a CL17 from the state.
Right. We won't meet regulations if with the old one.
Well, yeah, if I repair it, we will. But repairing it, if they come and they find that they don't have a computer board for it anymore, they won't be able to repair it. So we're going to pay for them to come up, look at it, and then eventually tell us, now you need to purchase another one because we don't have the parts for that.
So your recommendation is to buy the new one, right?
Correct. At least one of them. The controller, the 22-21-20, that will control both of the new ones. But we can obviously we can purchase one new one now and just try to have the other one fixed if they would be able to fix it. And then that way we'd have at least one working CL17 right now, hopefully two if they could fix it. But the difference is $1,000 if we just purchase another one with the repair. And that's assuming that the repair is only one major or two minor.
Yeah, but from a technical point of view, I would recommend having both instruments exactly the same. Because I've just seen it over the years in my industry where people switch, they have two different types of instruments. They measure the same sample and they can never get it right. So there's always these little differences, subtle differences between them. But so if we decide to buy them, I would say buy two of them, but.
So Tyler, and maybe Lee, when I look at, the budget document you sent out yesterday or the day before, it would appear that your year-end forecast versus the 2021 budget, the current budget, has a surplus of about $800,000. I think it's $830,000. Is that correct?
That doesn't sound right.
Well, that's what your numbers show.
The preliminary budget that we sent out is still a work in progress. None of those numbers on there are final by any means. That's why I'm trying to get some of these put in. I'd actually like to get done this year because we don't have any and we're supposed to have them.
Well, that's not my point. When I look at the column that says 2021 budget, this year's budget versus your year-end estimate, it shows that there's about a $600,000 surplus.
Correct. That's because there's an extra payment, which we talked about in the LRPC meeting. We have two payments of $400,000+ for the USDA we've been saving for 2 years, not just this year. So we have extra $400,000 left in our bank this year, plus the, I think it's 198.
Can you flash up the page you're talking about, maybe Kathy, or so we can see what table you're looking at, Andy?
So he's talking about what my projected budget is for the end of this year, as opposed to our 2021 budget that we said we put into effect at the beginning of this year.
So scroll all the way to the bottom, Kathy, if you would, please.
If you could enlarge it, too.
So.
Is that okay?
Yeah, you go to the bottom.
So I'm looking at the 1,092,141 and the 1,625,579 numbers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the 1.6 million is this year's budget. The 1.092 is the year-end projection.
Correct.
So, quick math, you've got about
$9,000, yes.
Yeah. So my point being, if we have this much of a surplus, why don't we just go ahead and buy two brand new, whatchamacallits and call it a day. It seems that, to Bill's point, having the current technology and having something that's, under warranty for several years, would certainly make sense in my mind.
I agree.
The majority of that difference is that 427 $555 for the USDA loan repayment.
Yeah, right. So that still leaves, I think Tyler's number was, $145,000 or $150,000 surplus.
Yes.
Right.
So we're talking about $7,000 investment in technology that will last another 10 to 15 years. So I would, make a motion that we go ahead and buy the new controllers.
I'll second it.
Let me write that down. So Andy and Bill seconded it. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so a motion passed or carried, I guess.
I think there's a way to vote on Zoom, but we can do that at the next meeting. So.
Oh yeah, there's a. Is it the reactions where you can raise your hand?
Something like that, but yeah, anyway, don't do it now.
Okay, sorry.
No, I just shouldn't have said it. But I'll talk to Kathy and Lee, see if we can figure it out.
Okay.
That cost was about $7,500.
Correct.
Okay.
I think I wrote down 72. I don't know.
It's let me get I have the exact number. If they do the same travel expense, if they do the same travel expense as they have for the repair of the controllers, which I don't see why that would change, it comes to $7,553.20. Is what they quoted us.
Thank you.
And that's all I have on the general manager's report.
Great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, we have the long range planning committee report.
Yeah. Just one last thing, Tyler. In looking at the usage for the last month and the last several months, actually, compared to last year, we are way under last year's usage levels, huh?
Yes, it's just diving off now that people are back into school. I think this last month it was like 46% less usage than the year before. The month before that, it was 38%. I mean, we're having some very, very small numbers come in. And when I look at the numbers the guys are doing all throughout November so far, we haven't had 100,000 gallon day yet in the entire system, let alone on one side.
Yeah. That also affects the income that we get for our metered usage.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it does. And promoting conservation, all that, it affects that metered usage.
Yeah. All right, thanks. So on the long-range planning committee, the committee met, I think it was on the 1st of November, and pretty much went through most of this then. I put in a few updates from the discussions that went on during that meeting, but there's still some areas that require further work, which we'll see as we go through this. But we're going to touch on the 2022 rate structure, where we are with the asset management plan, database update, forecasted reserves budget versus the reserves fund policy, preliminary budget information for next year, and the long-range planning committee chair replacement. We'll touch on that at the end. Next chart. So as far as the 2022 rate structure, the committee members provided input based on the data that we had reviewed over the last couple board meetings regarding usage levels and how we compared to other water companies and things like that. So the consensus from the board or the committee members was to pretty much maintain the status quo, which means continue with the 350 cubic foot. We actually go by a bi-monthly, so the 700 cubic feet for each billing period allocation base included in the base rate. and also to continue with the flat consumptive rate like we have now. Currently, it's $1.60 per 100 cubic feet. So continue with just the flat rate rather than a tiered rate structure. Some of the consumptive rate feedback was that the consumptive rate should be at our cost, which is $1.90 per 100 cubic feet above the base allocation. Should not be charging less than the cost of water for those who are being billed for it. And an inflationary adjustment to our base rate is appropriate, with a consumptive rate adjusted to cover our variable costs. Going to $1.90 is perhaps too much, as that is 18.75% increase. So some of the information that is on the table that, you know, to help the Long Range Planning Committee determine a recommendation for the rate, consumptive rate structure. Ideally, the income that you generate from consumptive rate should cover, one, our cost of providing the water, and the estimated variable costs. So as we know, based on the analysis that Tyler did, the cost to provide the water is $1.90 per 100 cubic feet, and the cost to purchase water from CCWD is $1.85 per 100 cubic feet. And if any of this information has changed, feel free to chime in, Tyler. Based on the most recent estimates in the preliminary budget that's been distributed, variable costs at 3.3% would amount to about $36,000, which also equates to about the same rate, $1.90 per 100 cubic feet. Currently this year, it's at $1.60, and estimated to bring an income of about $30,000. 2022 metered income at $1.90 is estimated to be about $36,800. Which I mentioned earlier is that would be an 18.75% increase to our consumptive rate. Meter income at a lesser rate of, as this example shows, $1.75 is estimated to be about $33,000, and that would reduce that increase in the consumptive rate to about 9.4%. So these rate options are not finalized yet, still being discussed. Based on looking at the preliminary budget for next year, a rate below our cost can be worked into the 2022 budget. We're still finalizing a consensus for a recommendation whether to increase the rate to our cost, the $1.90, or to potentially just increase it incrementally over a couple years. So that's still TBD.
Tom, you might want to make the board aware of Bob McGinnis's position on the history of adjusting the base rate and the reasons for going forward to make some minor adjustments.
Well, we want to make sure that, we adjust the rates on an annual basis to keep up with all of our expenses. A large portion of our income is generated from the base rates. And if you look at the usage levels, about 80% of our residences are using less than the base allocation. So you want to make sure that, that the base rates are covering, a good portion of our expenses. I know that Bob mentioned that, we really need to be careful in, if in not keeping the our base rates or not increasing them and ending up, you know, coming up with shortfalls as we move forward. So the recommendation was to make sure that we take that into consideration in our base rates. Was there more, Andy?
Yeah, there was, let me see here. Okay. So, you know, his point was in the past, there were some years where the base rate was not increased. And as a result, the company fell behind and was unable to meet their financial obligations because they didn't have the money to, you know, do some of the work and whatnot. So his point was a minor adjustment to the base is in his mind appropriate, and I personally tend to agree with him because I think the 18.75% increase on the consumptive rate is way over the top. So, you know, what the committee is looking at is, you know, some options to make some minor adjustments, you know, to the base rates since, you know, everybody rises and falls on that same $1.90 per 100 cubic foot tide. And then, you know, some mitigation of the consumptive rate so that it's not a, you know, huge amount for who ostensibly are full-time residents of the community.
Right. Move on to the next chart, please. So asset management plan database update. Just a quick review. The asset plan database reflects the time phase total replacement costs, which include planning, engineering, and contingency, what we call the soft costs, where applicable, based on all the assets' estimated end of life. And there's a spreadsheet that's pages and pages long that lists all the assets that were identified during that study. The initial database was completed in August of 2020, which was prior to the USDA project completion. And that showed a replacement cost estimate at $7,362,964 for the 40 years. The updated database with the input provided by Billy and Tyler was completed September 2021. And based on a review of that database, the changes here account for replacements that were completed during the USDA project. We corrected inconsistencies within the database that were discovered. And we applied soft costs only where required. The original database applied soft costs to every asset. And a lot of them don't require planning, engineering, and contingency. The updated replacement cost estimate at 40 years, based on those changes, came to $6,699,423. You know, as we can see just from Tyler's presentation, there's other things that come up that I know the analyzers were in the database. They weren't in this year, but there's dollar amounts for analyzers in the database. So changes are going to happen, and that's why it will need to be reviewed and updated on an annual basis. During our long range committee meeting, it was brought up that whether or not we had company vehicle replacements in the database. And after the meeting, going back and looking, did not see any company vehicle replacements in there. So we're going to work on, you know, the end of life of our current company vehicles and incorporate that into the database. So based on discussions with the committee over the last year since we've been working on this, we came up with a recommended 40-year funding plan, which would go out through 2061. The database actually runs for 90 years, and a lot of the replacements on the pipelines and everything done during the USDA project are that were just put in. The end of life on those is 90 years, so that's why it goes out that far. That's when all those main lines would need to be replaced again. But over such a extended period of time, many parts change. New parts are developed with higher reliability, and changes to the configuration of our water system may even occur. So making our replacement cost estimates would be much less accurate if you go out too far. After 40 years, if you look at the replacements beyond that, most of them are 70 plus years out there. 42 million or 78% are 70 plus years out. So it gets even more or less accurate the further out you go. And a good portion of those are pretty far out there. And also at the 40-year point, the USDA loan, which is the $427,555, will be paid off. And so we have that extra money that can be applied toward an updated funding plan. Any questions? Next page. This just shows some of the major asset replacements in 10-year increments. So I imagine we'll probably have to put a company vehicle or two in that first 10 years. But you can see that we still have a few of the USDA project tasks that were not completed that are still hanging out there. In the next 10 years, the large one there is Unit 13, Cypress Point area, which was not done during the USDA project. So that's a big replacement that needs to occur. It's showing in the database in 2035. And then also the meters are forecasted to last about 18 years. So the first replacement of meters would be out in 2038. And you can see just going down the page, some of the major items in each of the 10-year increments. The total of these items is the $4,560,000 that you see at the bottom. So those account for about 74% of all the replacements during that 40-year period.
So Tom, let me ask this question. When I look at 2041 to 2050, it looks like there's some hatch valves or something in there for 56,000. Is that the same hatch items that we were just talking about?
I don't know the details. I'd have to rely on
tank 4 control valves would be the main valves coming out of it. I'm guessing that they put them in that age because of the age that they are up there. The vaults as well, and the hatch. I don't know what hatch would either be the top of the vault or possibly the hatch going into the tank.
You're talking about, so hatch in this case isn't the supplier of the controllers or the analyzers.
No, that would be Hawk. Hawk.
Oh, Hawk.
H-A-C-H. When it's the hatch, the only hatches that when we use that term is the ones on the tank, how we're able to enter the tanks.
Okay. Sorry.
The other one on there, though, that I'm not sure what it is the El Ranchero pump house valves. I don't know what, there is no El Ranchero pump house.
Yeah, we can go back and look at that.
There's our pressure loop up there, but it doesn't have any valves. It has a couple main valves going into it. That is a raw water, and then a feed valve that heads back out into the system, which provides the water from tank 6. So I'd have to figure out and talk with Billy or maybe Tom, and figure out exactly what the El Ranchero pump house valves and valving is.
Yeah, I'll be up there in a couple weeks, and I can stop by the office and we can look at that.
Okay.
So this was just to give you a general idea of some of the larger expenses that are in the database. Next page, forecasted reserves budget. The data showing here was as of October 22nd, shows our bank accounts, the reserve accounts are comprised of those following bank accounts that are showing there. If I look at Lee's month end October financials, those amounts are very close in most cases. The Edward Jones reserves bond, which covers our reserves fund policy, dropped by about $2,000. So that $2,282,000 is now about $2,280,000. So that shows what the total estimated reserves balance will be at year end. The annual USDA loan payment is due in January, $427,555, but that's built into our base rates, so that amount is recouped each year as part of our rate structure. Requesting that the reserves fund policy be revised. It's shown on the next chart. And what it does, that revision, there was, when we put together the reserves fund policy, the capital asset reserve was, we were still going through the USDA project. So there were some things that we weren't sure, how they were going to come out with the project, and we also didn't have the database completed and approved. So at that point, the capital asset replacements was in the policy at $346,000, which was based on approximately 5% of our unrestricted net assets at the time. So that was back in 2017. As part of the wording in the policy, it mentioned that, once we did get the database completed and the project completed, the minimum funding target for the capital asset replacements in the policy would be calculated based on the estimated current replacement cost of assets, including the soft costs associated with the fund with the remaining useful life of 5 years or less. So that 346 based on the 5 years or less capital asset replacements increased by about 156,000 from 346 up to about 502,501. So that's what that paragraph is referring to. It doesn't change or impact the total reserves. It's just a shift of some money from one of our reserve accounts into another one. In addition to the above reserves, based on year-end financial records that Lee went through with me over the last 7 years, from 2014 to 2020, the net income revenues less expenses has averaged about a positive $304,000 a year. If we look at 2021, based on the preliminary budget estimates, year-end revenues are estimated to be $1,712,000, expenses $1,092,000, and if you factor in the USDA loan payment, which will occur in January, that you know, my calculation was that that would leave a net income of about $192,000. I believe that Lee is estimating a year, a net gain year to date at $506,000 or $507,000. So anyway, based on how the rest of the year pans out, we will definitely have a positive net income at the end of 2021, as well as the past 7 years. So we've got a long history. It shows in the audits, you know, this net income, the net income readings. And so based on that, you know, the net income can also be allocated into our reserves, or should be allocated into our reserves.
Has to be,
yeah.
Maybe I don't understand, but can you explain the five-year time that's in the policy that's proposed?
So if you look at our asset management plan database, if you look at the first 5 years of the plan, which is going to have to be adjusted a little bit for some of these other things that Tyler has mentioned, you know, the analyzers and potentially some company vehicle replacements. But if you look at the first 5 year replacement cost, in the plan, it comes to $501,565. And so that, based on the research that was done on reserves fund policies, that was a path or a process that was recommended for funding the capital asset reserve portion of it.
So am I correct then that if end of life is forecast for 6 years out, that we are not setting aside money for it?
Yes. We'll get into a chart that shows the amounts that would need to be set aside in the first 40 years. So we are accounting for a replacement cost for a 40-year period. So it goes beyond the 5 years. This policy that we have covers the first 5 years. Let me go on to the next page and see if it helps. We can go beyond. I already talked about the and I believe that at the end of the meeting, there's a section where we're going to be requested to for the board to approve the revision to the policy. The next page. So, as we saw on the prior page, the estimated reserves budget at year end is going to be about 280 million. If we set aside the reserves fund policy target levels, the prior page showed, you know, the different target levels. So we have restricted reserves, emergency reserves, capital asset reserves, and operating reserves. The capital asset reserve, as I mentioned, is about $502,000. And the total reserve fund targets for the policy is the $956,320 that's showing there. The reserve fund balance at year end is, you know, if you you set aside the fund policy target level there, the 956, that would leave the other reserves balance at the 1,326. The next little graph there shows the asset management plan, 100% replacement costs in 10-year increments. And you can see on the far right there, the replacement cost funds required per year to meet those replacements. So if you take the year 2040, the worst case is that we would have to budget $175,000 a year toward replacement costs of all of our assets. The next bullet mentions, though, that based on financial history, which we looked at on the prior page, our annual net income, we averaged over $300,000 for 7 years. We're going to be around over $200,000 for this year or thereabouts. So it appears that we can cover the asset replacement costs without touching the reserves balance that's shown above or the reserves fund policy capital targets. Any comments or questions on that? A note that this does not take into account what we've been discussing the last several months, the potential need or decision by Blue Lake Springs to purchase additional 100,000 gallons per day water capacity from CCWD. Tyler, a couple weeks ago, got an updated based on rate changes at CCWD. The price of that is now at $851,000. We still need to have further discussions with Michael Minkler at CCWD to work out the details of what a revised agreement would actually come to. Some of the questions that were asked or brought up during our long-range committee meeting is, find out whether or not we can purchase additional capacity in smaller increments, smaller than 100,000 gallons per day. Can the cost be spread out over multiple years? So once we have further discussions with Michael at CCWD, we can bring that information back and let the committee and the board know, where we stand with this.
Tyler, have you had any success since setting up that meeting with Michael?
Not with one with me, you, and Tom, I believe is what we discussed in the LRPC, but I have talked to Michael email and over the phone a couple times. During other meetings, he definitely expressed that we are going to have to stay with the 100,000 a day. They wouldn't do a smaller increment, and that was based upon what our max day usage required. And so that was somewhere almost 200,000 cubic feet, gallons. So that's where their board had stuck with, that we weren't going to be able to purchase another 50 or say even 75, that it had to be in 100,000 increment. He did express that we can spread it out over a few years, but we basically, as the board and us, needed to decide what we wanted and then present that to Michael. And then we can have a discussion with Michael in regards to, say, a 5-year payment plan or a 3-year payment plan.
Tyler?
Yes.
I thought we were also waiting for Michael to send us a draft agreement.
Michael didn't want to draft up the agreement he got back to me with because we were so up in the air about what we wanted to do as a board. He said he didn't want to write anything up that would be not speaking in terms of what we want.
Okay.
So thank is you. Michael the sole decider for CCWD? I mean,
no, it is their board.
Huh?
It is their water. It is their board.
Is he the chairman of the board, or?
Michael is the general manager of CCWD.
Right. So he's not the board.
No.
All right. So
if he doesn't, he's came here to speak on their behalf. So he definitely has what they have talked about is what he brought here. And that was when Dave was still here.
Right. I just want to make sure I understand how the decision-making process is there and what, how they're governed. I'll have to look into, but, right. Okay.
As far as I know, their final say comes from their board.
And what Tyler's saying is correct, because I was at the meetings with Dave and Michael where we talked about the water purchase. I think I attended a couple of meetings for that, and they wouldn't go under the 100,000 gallons per day.
Right, but if we can show that's unreasonable, then we could make an appeal to the board. And that,
I don't think we can show that's unreasonable.
We can't, because we're showing on our numbers that we require that much at least one day out of the summer, and that's where they're saying they don't want to offer us less because we're just going to come back and need to purchase another 50 down the road. I believe that's the way they're putting it.
They look at our worst day, our max day, and that's what they're
putting. No, I understand. All right. So you're saying we don't have a position to change their position.
We can ask again.
Yeah.
No, but we don't have any leverage or any reason to ask again. If we don't, we can't show where it's to their benefit.
Correct. The numbers that we have won't benefit us at all. I can't pull forward a number that would show that there's no way that we'll get to 200,000 within a year.
Any other comments or questions on this page?
So, Tyler, I'm scratching my head over what you just said. I thought this past couple of years, we only had a handful of days where we went over the initial 100,000. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So what we're looking at here is an additional 100,000 to take us to 200,000
mm-hmm.
peak usage, correct?
Correct.
And the likelihood of us reaching that level for $851,000 is really infinitesimal, if at all.
It's a number we will reach on the holidays when we go to 4th of July, Memorial Day, Labor Day. We're looking at 380,000 gallons, 380,000 gallons of water in a day that'll get used in our subdivision. That would equate to that 200 that they're coming to, half of what we make. Oh.
No, more than half of what we need, right?
Yeah, it'll be more than half of what we need, definitely. I would be able to pump from tank 4 to tank 6 in the summertime, which right now for our agreement, we don't even touch that during the summertime, because if I run it one day, I'll go over that 100,000 in a day.
So you go over 100,000 or over 200,000?
If we bought another one, I wouldn't go over 200, but that would only be on those holidays. When I pump on the system, there's the usage that comes out of 4 and goes to the tank 4 side, plus I'm pulling water from one side and putting it on the other half. So basically the entire subdivision is now using CCWD water for that day. So those days are the ones that really hit us if I was to do that in the wintertime. But our agreement says I can pump as much as I want in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. This agreement for the 100,000 a day only lies within these few summer months. So as we did this summer, we went over it very little this last year. So it's not detrimental that we need to purchase this right away. But it is something we should think about, because we are going over our agreement. And right now, Michael and their board aren't saying anything to us, but they could. They could come back and say we're in violation of our original agreement of only the 100,000 a day, and they could take it away. They've done that in the past with us.
Any other questions on this?
Next page. So a little review of the 2022 preliminary budget information. that's come out. There was a revision that came out on about November 4th. So these values reflect what's in that revised preliminary budget. You see there 2021 budget, $1,625,000, year-end estimated income without the one-time co-bank dividend is $1,657,000. And the proposed preliminary budget income is at $1,659,546. A few notes. The 2022 preliminary budget, the home and lot base rates in that preliminary budget increased from 2021 by $20,663. You can see in the little chart below these bullets that the cabin with meters, commercial and bare lot base rates all increase slightly over 2%. And with the, and if you look at the total annual rate, including the USDA loan, the total increase is about 1.5%, little under 1.5. The preliminary budget shows a metered water income at $36,844, which is based on the usage rate of $1.90 per 100 cubic feet. The preliminary budget is not showing any income from new connections, which is a decrease of about $21,000 from this year. And just a statement that the final base rates and metered rates obviously will need to be adjusted once the final expenses are determined and approved. Any questions on this? Next chart. So looking at it at the expenses side of things, 2021 budget, $1,625,579. Year end estimated expenses is the $1,092,000. And then we also have the $427,555 that'll be paid in January, our annual USDA loan payment. So if you added that to the estimated expenses of $1,092,000, that comes to $1,520,000 roughly. 2022 proposed preliminary budget, including the $427,555 loan, is $1,659,546. So expenses increased from 2021, the 2021 estimated expenses by about $139,140,000, about 9.2% increase. Some of the areas, as we go through, we know now that the $10,000 for the driveway could potentially be $55,000, depending on which way, where that information leads us. Employee insurance in 2021 was $112,000, 2022, $139,140,000. So the pretty significant increase there. I mean, I believe part of that is number of employees. Has increased. New additional project expense account of $10,000. I saw that on the revision, and I wasn't sure exactly what that was. Tyler, the $10,000 there, anything specific?
On the new additional projects?
Yeah,
that's in my reportable board items, but... We've gotten some of the parts, actually most of the parts I've been able to get my hands on from different distributors, and I'm still awaiting a few of them to show up here, but we have most of them in hand. We'd only be looking at now, if we own all the parts, just hiring somebody to do the digging and paving of, say, a 5x5 square in the middle of the road, 4x4 square, very small patches that we'll have to dig down to where, say it was a gang of valves, get to the valve, disconnect the old pipe and flange the new pipe from where the valve was.
What he's talking about is the completion of the old mains to the new.
Yeah, basically getting separation because we still have the old mains, which are off by just us turning off a valve. That was how we filled the new mains. So they're off. If that valve decides that it's going to leak one day, it could suck in the old dirty water on the other side or whatever sitting on that side and could possibly be a potential health harm to the public. So that's why we would want to dig down, get those old pipes disconnected from that valve and cap off that valve, or possibly remove the valve and cap the hole that the valve was in on that pipe.
So back on page 20, you know, when I showed a kind of a timeline of some of the major asset replacements in that in this first year, we were showing the additional USDA projects at 45,000. Is this 10,000 additional to that?
No, this is just what I was expecting that we might be able to get done this year, according to what parts we have. That larger amount would be because we have part of Borough Court into that and services. There are two services on Spring Valley, one service still in Unit 13, and I believe another service off of El Dorado that needs to be set and put in place. Well, those services is what would probably cost more money because we'll be looking at digging across the road, tapping onto the main, putting a 1-inch pipe all the way across the road, and then building a service for the bare lot that's there now. Those okay. ones would cost quite a bit more than just us having somebody dig open a hole in the road. We'd have Billy or our guys, our field guys, do the actual bolting or removing of the old valve and then have, you know, say a Cooper come in and do the patch job over the top because our guys would put in the gravel, whack it back in place and do what they're supposed to do on their end. So that okay. part would save us quite a bit of money as far as just not hiring, say, Mazingo. That was $4,000 a day to come and work here.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Pumping power, so estimated for this year at about 20,000 and about 27 next year. I know that PG&E rates are going up, mm-hmm. and so there's some reasons behind that, and we'd possibly be pumping more. You know, as Tyler mentioned, pumping from one tank to another. So I guess that would increase the amount of pumping.
Yeah, it would increase it at one location, but would decrease it in another. The main reason that's going to go up is because of the way the price of the power is going to be. They're going to basically give us a tier and say our highest tier that we use during the summer, that's what we're going to be charged every month. There, whether we use it or not. So that's why that one's going to go up.
Wow. CPPA power, not just PG&E.
Yes, well, PG&E, but it will reflect right into CPPA, yes.
And then the payroll and office wages expense requires further analysis and input. If you look at the preliminary budget currently, you know that first of all, the payroll and wages make up a pretty good percentage of our total expenses. So it's an area that really needs to be ironed out to find out where we stand with an approved expense level and how much income we would need to generate to cover those expenses. The 2021 estimated expense for these accounts, payroll and wages, is about $433,000. The 2022 expense increase is about $52,000 to $485,000, 12%. And as I mentioned, determining a final approved expenses in this area needs to occur in order to finalize the total income requirements and shareholder rates. I know that there's seems like it's a delay this year in trying to get the AWWA compensation survey. So that's something that is needed to help analyze this area. I mentioned at the bottom that there are some requirements on our budget submittal that Lee informed me of from USDA that we need to submit on an annual basis our budget to the USDA within a certain period of time from the end of our fiscal year, or we can be in non-monetary default. So we need to keep that in mind. Also, our bylaws state that the annual budget needs to be adopted on or before the start of each fiscal year. So we've got some constraints there that we need to work with. I know that it sounds like that the AWWA survey isn't going to be available until possibly mid-December. Correct. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so more analysis and review of this area needs to occur.
So help me understand what the actual dates are that are required to meet both the USDA as well as our bylaws.
So the USDA, if I remember right, Lee, it stated within 90 days from the end of our fiscal year.
Correct, 90 days.
Yeah, it needs and to be submitted.
And our bylaws, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and our bylaws say before the beginning of the next year that we need to adopt the annual budget.
So what does a violation of our bylaws actually do? It's going to be really difficult to get, you know, not knowing when the AWWA survey is going to come out. It's, you know, obviously going to come out, you know, right in the middle of the holiday period. And I can't guarantee that I can get that work done by December 31st.
Well, as you can see in the budget, currently our income and expenses are at zero with the 12%. So we could leave that there and then come up with your proposal for payroll in January. But we would have a balanced budget to give out to everyone at the end of this fiscal year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. You know, without getting to a lot of detail at this point, I'm a little concerned about showing publicly a 12% increase in wages and salaries, unless we can really back that up with, you know, hard data.
The 12% isn't going to be an increase in wage or salaries. We have to have more than just the baseline of what salaries are in there because of the unknowns. The guys could be plowing or have overtime throughout the entire year. And if we don't plan on having an extra percentage in there for it, we're going to go over budget on our salaries.
Well, I think, you know, you Lee and I need to have a conversation, you know, Bruce as well, around how we've done this in the past, because in the past, when we've looked at salary and wages, we've looked at, you know, the merit increase percentages and then the dollars that, you know, come about as a result of that. And that's what's shown in the wage and salary. So if you're, you know, looking at overtime and other add-on expenses that are in the wage and salary line, that probably should be in a separate line item.
Yeah, I agree with Andy, because if you just throw out we're given a 12% increase, it doesn't sound, you know, doesn't sound good.
If I could let the board know that the 12% increase was put in there with a couple different factors that we had researched, but it's not in set in stone. We can eliminate or go down to 10% to 5%, whatever, you know, Andy, Bruce, and the staff come up with, but we will also have to find expenses to fill a line item to fill if we keep our income at the level that it is right now.
Well, I think what I was, I guess I misunderstood. I thought you'd have a line for the merit increase and you, and if you had a separate item for anticipated overtime, right?
We can make a separate item for overtime. That's not a problem at all.
Yeah, I'd like to see that carved out because I,
you don't want to send out a letter saying we're giving everybody a 12% increase when the average in the country is going to be like 2 or 3%.
No, it's not any longer. The average is between 10 and 15.
What's that?
Average payroll increase.
Merit increase.
The salary increase.
No.
McDonald's is doing 10 to 15% this year.
The, all right. So let's, so people that have, people that have salaries in the industry in California that, you know, not increases due to the change in the minimum wage law are not going to get, they're not going to get a 12% increase across California. So
that makes sense. The cost of living,
merit increase or cost of living increase, whatever we call it, should be a separate line than anticipated overtime. And we should present it that way because if, I'm just saying, if you put the anticipated overtime in the same line item as your merit increase, we're going to get a lot of blowback.
That's easily done. Separating.
But yeah, the 12% just got put in there because we haven't been able to discuss what's in the AWWA book. There's no way that I'm going to be able to give 12% across the board to everybody. That's, that would be crazy to think about. I mean, that's not, that's just not going to happen. So it's just a placeholder number, and it also included the overtime since we didn't have a line item just for the overtime. I mean, we don't know if it's only going to snow a foot all year or if we're going to get 5 feet in a month. The guys could be out plowing all night long and we're going to owe them that overtime. So we have to plan on that part, and that's fine. We can make another line item for it and reduce the percentages, but it's pretty hard for me to be able to put a number in the salaries unless I just go with the same number we had from last year and say nobody's getting an increase right now because we haven't figured that. We can go and put that number in there, and that would work too.
So we would have to decrease the income or find an additional line item to zero out expenses and income.
So my suggestion on that, Lee, is once this is all ironed out, if expenses come in below income, we put in a line item for building up additional reserves.
But that doesn't normally go on a budget. Well, we can talk about that later. I see what you're saying, Tom, but normally that's just a net income that goes into reserves, not a budgeted line item. But yes, it can be done.
But couldn't we just put a line item into like fund additional projects like Borough Court like we wanted to do?
Yes, we definitely could do that. We could up the new projects by 25,000 or whatever we need to balance to zero.
Right. Yeah, something like that would work.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions on this page? If you can move to the next page. Just based on the discussions we had in the long range committee meeting on the 1st of November, you know, we talked about how, you know, the seeing if we made adjustments to the base rate and factor in possibly lowering the metered rate down some, you know, along the lines of what Bob McGinnis had talked about and what Andy brought up a little while ago. You know, I generated this additional option for consideration. So in this example, you know, you could see that, let's see if we went back to the way it is in the preliminary budget right now. For instance, cabin with meter, the increase was $12. The base rate change at 2.04%. This example shows it at 16 for 2.72%. So in this example, the total rate change for all the cabins with meters, total rate change is just under 1.95. So it increases the base rate. And so if we go down, and it also, well, I'll touch on it down below in the bullets. This revised or option here structure covers the latest revised budget expenses of $1,659,000. It reflects a base rate increase from 2021 to the 2.72 that I mentioned, and an annual base increase amounting to 1.95%. The bare lot in this example, annual rate from the prior chart, I reduced it from 355 down to 343. We have a goal to get the bare lot rates down to 50% of meter base rates. So this this was just an effort to get them closer to the 50%. You can see on the far right of the chart up there, it brings it down to 54.9. So it's getting closer to the 50%. The adjusted bare lot USDA loan amount, I adjusted that to instead of 114 to 115.50 annual amount, which is equal to 50% of the meter rate. No change in combined lots and membership lots. I also added a line item for HOA Snowflake in the USDA loan portion. My feeling is they should have to pay this fee just like everybody else, or the commercial accounts. USD adjustments increase our USDA loan total income to an amount that covers our annual payment. You can see there that it comes to $427,581. Our annual payment's $427,555. The prior example came to $427,044, so it didn't quite cover our loan payment. So this was just a minor adjustment to make sure that that covers our loan payment. As far as a metered rate, we could adjust the metered rate from $1.90, which was the 18.75% increase, down to $1.75, which is 9.4% increase. And as I mentioned on that other chart, maybe so increase the metered rate on an incremental basis rather than going all the way to the $1.90. That would probably reduce our income from the $36,844 that's estimated down to about $33,000. So based on the base rate and metered rate adjustments in this example, we would the total income would be equal to the $11,500 revised budget and would still cover all of our 2022 revised estimated expenses of $1,659,000. If we even reduce the metered rate down to a little more, I can't remember. I think it would probably adjust our income down by a couple thousand dollars. So it's not huge amounts that adjustments to the metered rate would have on an effect on our income. So it's just another option to consider if we want to, basically still meeting the estimated expenses, but making some adjustments to the metered rate and increasing the base rates slightly more than they were in the prior example. Any comments or questions?
I have a question. And okay. It's minor. But why would Snowflake Lodge pay only half the USDA loan? I think they're paying, in this example, they're showing the same price as the Barrow lot, which is about half of what like a house would have or the commercial.
Yeah.
And it's minor. And I think HOA also has other, they also have other, well, they have tiny little meters out there. So.
Right. Yeah, I have no problem with making that change. They in the past, we've never identified them in the USDA loan payment. That was just an initial attempt to, you know, give them responsibility in that area as well. Yeah, it's.
Is Sequoia Woods treated the same way as other accounts, other commercial accounts?
Yeah, they're one of our commercial accounts, right? Tyler?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes, we serve two of their bathrooms.
Yeah, all we supply to them is the bathrooms.
And they're paying the full USDA amount?
Their payment for the USDA is the same as the cabins with meters, 231.
Yeah.
We also serve their maintenance shed too. That would be the three spots.
There's three accounts.
So,
Sharon's point, I think the Snowflake Lodge HOA should be paid the full amount or charged the full amount of the annual
payment. Yeah,
I agree.
We hadn't done that in the past because it's kind of like charging ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, where we both govern the people that are in there.
Yeah,
I don't see that. I mean, I agree that that was a reason, but I don't see the way the HOA operates and the way we operate are independent. So we should pay for what we get from them and they pay for what they get from us.
The HOA does pay. They do own one or two lots and they do pay into the base rate and the USDA on that, just simply not on the rec center.
Right. But if I have three lots, I'm going to pay three times, right? So if I own three houses in Blue Lake Springs, would I only pay water, the USD on one lot, or would I pay for all three?
If there was no combination of lots there, you would pay for three.
All right. So then HOA would pay for the lodge as separate from the two lots they own. Right? So we're being consistent.
We are being consistent.
If they pay, we're being consistent, is what I'm saying.
Right. No. We don't charge ourselves, which is why we don't charge the HOA. That was our thinking before.
Yeah, but they also use just a ton of water.
We do charge them for the water.
Yeah. Their water went up substantially over the past year because they basically abandoned their wells for the watering. It was clogging up all their sprinkler heads, so they went to our water.
Yeah, so I think they should be charged the full amount.
Yeah, and originally they had a tiered system, and that was to help, I think Mike put that in place so it would help them promote conservation, and they're just blowing right through that tiered system and going to the top tier every time, which is our $1.60. So they're going to pay a flat rate just like everybody else this next coming year.
Okay.
I can change that to the 231.
It's such a minor amount. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Yeah, I probably use the $115.50 just to get the bottom line dollar amount as close to $427.55. Right. But it makes sense to use the $231.
Tom, this is great work, and I didn't mean to, you know, sit and nitpick about one little item. So
No problem.
That's the engineer.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Wait till I call MC about that class one gravel they had us put down.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, really. Next page. We've touched on the long range planning committee chair replacement a few months back. I've mentioned that, and I was planning to step down from the chair position at the end of this year. So we threw the request out there, requesting to solicit ideas or any recommendations for my replacement. The only suggestion that was submitted was from Bob McGinnis, which was the recommendation to have Tyler assume the Long Range Planning Committee chair position in addition to his general manager responsibilities. So I think, Tyler can do a great job as in the chair position. I just think we need to keep in mind, he's also the general manager. He's been in that position for just about 6 months now. It's a new assignment for him. And as we talked about in the long range committee meeting, the chair position can amount to quite a few hours each month. So it would be a pretty big burden on Tyler to have to step up and take on this assignment. And so it's actually, I think it should be recommended maybe as a last resort.
Can we do this in the executive session? I'm not comfortable.
It's only if we start talking about salaries. If we talk about salaries, then yes, it should go into executive. But if we're just going to let Tom say what his replacement could be doing or possibly divvying up the assignments that Tom is handling all by himself right now, we're okay in open.
Right, but he's talking about Tyler's skill set. I don't think that's. Well, I'm not comfortable.
I think he just meant
he was
early in his 6 month tenure. I think they.
Well, what he meant.
I see what you're saying.
What he meant is open for interpretation. So to me, it's not appropriate. But the board agrees that we can do that. Then obviously, it's not my decision. But.
Well, I think that Sharon, Tom, myself. And Craig Lutz has also expressed an interest to meet on this subject. You know, the reality is, to replace Tom in kind is not realistic. There's not another person on the board that could, dedicate the amount of time that Tom has, to fulfill what we know today as the, chair of the Long Range Planning Committee role and responsibilities. So, Sharon, I think you need to call some sort of a sidebar meeting to discuss, what is this role really and what does it look like going forward? Because of what I just said, it's, we can't replace Tom as we know Tom's role to be today.
Right. I agree. And I think that's a great suggestion, Andy, that we have a separate meeting, including Tom. What is it? You had Tom, Andy, Craig, and Sharon to discuss how to divide up the role.
Yes.
Yep.
Move forward. Can I send an email out later to those individuals and work on that one?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I didn't mean to circumvent what you're saying.
So, and I just want to mention that, we're getting close to the end of this year, and I'm not going to just walk away. I will consider providing some support to assist as needed for as long as it's needed. So what we talked about during the committee meeting was getting a list of the major tasks. So if you go to the next page, rather than one person trying to handle all of it, I'm not saying that I did everything, but there a lot of support and backup was provided by the committee members. but you can see a lot of the tasks involved that do require, you know, on a average, you know, probably I would guess, you know, 20 to 30 hours a month. You know, you can see there the different items that are mentioned. They all add up. And just getting presentations ready for the long-range committee meetings and the board meetings takes some time, you know, and the analysis required to generate the information that's in those presentations. So anyway, I think a meeting, as was recommended, would be great.
Okay, I'll set up a meeting. Thank you for all your work, Tom.
And you bet. Also,
thank you for, I mean, the presentation was fabulous, and I know it takes a long time to put all this together, so thank you. And to the LRPC for meeting. So.
Yeah, if we wanted to do that meeting in person, you know, out in December, you know, if we get a date settled, I'll be up in the area.
Okay. Are you there the entire month?
Off and on. We'll be going from Arnold to Roseville to visit Denise's folks a few times during that period.
Okay.
But yeah, just we can maybe throw out a couple dates and I can tell you if they work.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the long range committee presentation.
Well, thank you so much. That's a lot of work. We appreciate that. So I think the next item is the approving the updated the reserves fund policy revision. Did you want to talk to that, Tom?
Yeah, as I mentioned, it's, I think the entire policy is in the package, but the portion that needed adjustment now that the asset management plan was completed and the USDA project was completed, you can see in this red line the portions that are being taken out, and it mentioned in there that that this revision would eventually be needed, and so the approach that was in there that was recommended to satisfy the dollar amount for this capital asset replacement target level is showing there, and as I mentioned earlier. You know, if you looked at the first 5 years replacement costs in the database, the 501, 565 is what it came to. Actually, you know, based on some of the changes that Tyler has spoken to today as far as analyzers and different things like that, we might want to review and the company vehicles. We might want to review the first 5 years again and see, rather than, you know, approve this now, you know, maybe just be sure that this amount isn't going to change a little bit and have to revise it again. We're going to be revising the database annually, so this document will probably be revised annually anyway. So I guess all I'm saying is, do we want to approve it now or wait and just be sure that the five-year dollar amount is needs any revision?
I would think that looking forward with all the vehicles, none of them are going to need to be replaced in 5 years unless something dramatic happens to it. I really don't see that any of the vehicles that need to be replaced that soon. Having enough money in there for the 5 years, though, I think that you could probably stay with what we have. There was only the CL-17s. I mean, there's these unknowns that can happen, but for the foreseeable future, I can't say that the trucks will be a part of something we're going to need to add in there as a replacement right away. There obviously will be the numbers that we need to save for over that 5 years, because say 10 years from now, we will need to purchase a new vehicle. But I think to stick with your five-year fund, it could go up a little bit, but it shouldn't be dramatic.
Okay.
So where do we stand on the backhoe issue?
The backhoe issue got totally put on the back burner because, one, we can't get a backhoe of proper size for $60,000. They're just not available used because it has to be a used piece of equipment. The only two that we found, one was in Hawaii. The other was up in Portland in Oregon. And preferably, I don't want to purchase a backhoe without being able to see it, because I do somewhat know my heavy equipment, and I don't want to purchase something that's been next to the ocean for its first 15 years of life that we're going to go purchase.
So does that suggest that, well, I guess, Tom, is that in the five-year reserve budget?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
That was just given to me as a $60,000 item that I could try to purchase this year. And looking into it, it just really isn't feasible. And the equipment's just not around. It's hard to find a newer piece of equipment. A used piece of equipment would have to be much larger than what we need. And so I don't know if purchasing, say, a 420 backhoe is going to be something we need.
Yeah, well, that's been my argument all along. So anyway, okay.
Yeah, I mean, but the guys, let's just take an instance what we just did with gravel. If we had a backhoe and we have a small dump trailer, they could have done most of that work themselves if we would just hire traffic control. So we would add a lot smaller hiring in that aspect. The guys can be able to perform a lot of these repairs if they had that piece of equipment. But as you know too, Andy, the amount of time that we do need them, we're looking at once a year, maybe five times a year at best, if you want to include snow removal. So it's really not a necessary item, considering that, I think we amounted to, me and Billy went through, we have about 8 different contacts that are local excavating people that we can call in an emergency.
Okay.
And so prices and availability can change in the next year or two also. So we can bring it back later.
Yeah, if it's something down the road that I can find and it looks like it can be somewhat feasible and affordable for us, I can present it to the board again, but as of right now, I've kind of put that one completely on the back burner because it's just not available. And to think about spending $60,000 plus insurance, plus training for the guys, because they're going to have to hold a backhoe certificate at least through the state to be able to be insured by that. There's just numerous things that it just really doesn't pan out right now.
Okay, with that said, then I guess we it makes sense to go forward with this requesting the approval of this revision.
Yeah, can I just a thought here going forward, maybe next year, maybe not this year, but rather than put fixed dollar amounts in this document, we could just put the put references to the capital asset inventory database, and that way, which is going to be updated every year anyway, and that way you're not trying to update two documents every year. You could just base this document on whatever percentage or however you want to tie it to the capital asset database.
So you're saying on that one area, the capital asset reserves, not include a dollar amount in there, but just leave the other dollar amounts in there or not include any dollar amounts?
I think I'm saying don't include any dollar amounts and update the dollar amounts in your capital asset database. Go ahead.
All I'm saying is those other items aren't really associated with our our database. You know, their reserve fund set aside for the USDA required reserves and emergency reserve fund. So they're not included in our database.
Maybe what I'm saying then is, for instance, where it says minimum target funding 501-565 will be calculated based on the estimated current replacement cost of assets, just leave out the 501-565 and say it's tied to the asset reserves.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you.
Doesn't have to be done this year. I'm just thinking that it's unnecessary to update both documents every year, I think.
Right. Gotcha.
So I think we need a motion to approve the reserve policy. Do I hear a motion?
I move that the reserve policy be accepted as written.
Thank you.
Second.
Who is that, John?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I looked away and you disappeared, so great.
So Bruce and John?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's all I got. Okay, so all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, so the motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Tom, for all your work.
You're welcome.
So I think the next item is correspondence. Oh, here we go. So I want to let everybody know that at least one of the board members has a hard stop at noon, California time. I think it's 2:12. It's, what time is it? 11:12?
11:12, right.
So I think, and we do need to get to the budget a bit. So I just want to let everybody know. Okay?
Okay.
Well, there's no correspondence, and the billing, actually, Lee reported that on that on her staff memo. So if that's okay with you guys, you can move on.
Anybody have any questions? Okay, Tyler.
Moving on to the reportable board items. Looking at that sheet, we've kind of discussed quite a few of them when we were in Tom's report, the additional wholesale water purchase. So I am still setting up a meeting between, I believe it's going to be Tom, me, and Andy, and then that will help. We'll discuss more in depth with Michael about what we might want. That's where I think we're leaving off with the additional wholesale water for right now. If anybody has any other questions about it, I can answer that now.
I'd like to discuss it maybe next week with you, Tyler, because I just went on the website of CCWD, mm-hmm. and they're not a Calaveras County. They're under the state water district. So,
well, maybe everybody's regulated by the state.
We're no, but it goes. Anyway, I just read how their structure is. So I do want to talk to you about it next week. It'll take too much time here. So
okay. The CCWD tiers. The only explanation I've come up with so far is the peak pricing for power. When they have to produce more water, they fall into peak pricing, which makes the cost of water go up. So that's how they're able to justify their tier system. We don't necessarily fall under that because we always make our water in that early morning time and stop just after noon, about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Okay.
So if that answers the CCWD tier question. Moving to the next one, the BLSMWC versus CCWD water. It was expressed that I have it in my monthly charts of what we take from them and what we use of ours. It simply was just put into a bar graph form, so now you can see them side by side. I believe it's the red is CCWD, the blue is ours, if you go into that chart. Uh, Next one with the arborist with no watering of forest trees. That's mainly the bark beetles is what it entails. My research into more bark beetle things is that you, if you're watering your tree because you see bark beetles in it, it's already too late. The only time you should be watering that forest tree or doing any insecticide or mulching over the top is preemptive. You need to do preemptive maintenance to make sure that the trees don't fall under the harm of the beetles. They say that if your tree is healthy and has enough of its nutrients, that nothing should happen to it. Most of them fall, if you go around Blue Lakes, even with the beetle die-off that we had, most of the ones that are happening again, if you notice, are in condensed areas. They really, they want you to only have somewhere in the ballpark of 5 trees per acre. It isn't the 30 plus that we have on half acres or acre in Blue Lakes. They also recommend that you water around the canopy and not at the base of the tree. So most of the watering that I find in the field or during the times of me being in the field, it was somebody putting a soaker hose at the base of the tree, turning it on and leaving town. And nobody was there, the hose running for days on end. Normally that's how we would find them, is because we would see in the numbers in the morning that a zone is spiked. And we went through that zone to find that there were hoses on forest trees. Usually at that point, we turn them off because it is not helpful to us, nor is it helpful to the trees. So if there's any questions on bark beetles.
Well, I guess the $64 question might be, without delaying this discussion on the budget, is are we condoning the watering of forest trees?
No, we do not condone the watering of forest trees. Yeah. It actually states if you are to water your tree, you should be doing it into the winter time. You should not be doing it during drought time. Like I said, by that time, it's too late. If you're having to water your tree because you see it stressed, it's too late.
Yeah, no, I understand all of that, but I just want to make sure our constituents understand that watering forest trees is not allowed, period.
Yes, that is, it's in our rules, and this is just reinforcing that fact that it's in our rules and it needs to stay there. The arborist telling people that, of course, they're going to tell you to water your tree, because if you do too much, it's going to kill it and you're going to have to call that arborist back to remove it. So, I mean, it's not... they're not giving you great information is the way I should put that.
Okay. So Kathy, would you go back to the prior, which was, I think the,
the correspondence page?
No, it was the other, can you go back, Kathy?
Is it the,
okay. For the reserve fund policy?
No.
Are you looking for the budget?
I'm looking for the page that was just prior to the one that we were on, with the reportable items.
Oh, here.
Yeah, so report on billing. When I look at the proposed budget for next year, I see that there's an increase in penalties from roughly $3,400 this year to $18,000 next year. So I am assuming that penalties are delinquencies?
Yes.
And when I looked in the last deck that you sent out, we've got a huge amount that's out beyond 90 days. And so the concern I have is, that's at this point, that's nothing more than a balance sheet item, and it shouldn't be included in the budget, because the chances of us collecting that is de minimis. So it can't be recorded as real income.
So that would be the 11 liens that we have that equal just over $100,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're never going to collect even close to that amount,
nope.
If any of it. So my point on penalties on the budget is, I'm thinking, and of course, Tom, I would yield to you given your financial background, that would be a since it's not a realistic income number, that would then be a balance sheet number, right?
That makes sense.
Write it off. It's bad debt, and when you recover it, if you recover it, add it back.
Yeah.
That's the way we did it at Deer.
But the penalties go for current billing as well. It's $10 if you on your put to your account when you are current, not just the past due. And we do have quite a few dollars coming in towards the penalties.
Okay, so I guess the line item in the budget, and I'm jumping ahead, obviously, that shows $18,100 for next year's penalty budget. What amount of that is delinquent, you know, 120-day delinquent?
None.
Hardly any at all.
At this point, we're just charging them penalty, interest only. The penalty is only if you are past due on that current billing. So all those people that have liens are only being charged interest.
What are we?
This is on current balances. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, well, let's move on because I'm the one that has an absolute drop dead stop at noon.
Okay. I was trying not to out you.
All right. So there are more reportable items. Do you want Kathy to go through that or just see it when you get the reportable items?
Oh, we'll just see it when we get it. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Tyler, just a thought here. Is there a reputable arborist who would be willing to write an article in the Butler?
Not that I know of. I don't know any very. I know maybe a couple guys that trim trees.
Nate Brenner would be the guy to go to.
You're just about to say you don't know a responsible arborist?
No, I don't because. Like I said before, why would he tell you something that's going to make it to where he doesn't have business anymore?
I would agree with Andy. Nate's pretty good, so you might approach him. I just think it would be very credible to have an arborist rather than us telling you.
Well, all the places I'm getting the info from are from reliable sources. I'm not just gathering this info from just out of the air.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody's suggesting that. I think what Tom's or Bruce's point is having an article written by a licensed, credible arborist. And a lot of people up here know Nate Brenner. You know, he's a young guy. He's graduated from UC Davis. And he would in no way, shape, or form propose watering the forest. I know that for certain. Okay. But there are things people can do to mitigate the risk of bark beetles.
Yes, there is. There's definitely things you can do to mitigate it. But as it states, once you have them, it's very tough to get rid of them. So it's basically preventative maintenance you need to do if you want to.
Exactly.
Keep
right. Yeah. Tyler, I don't doubt anything that you said. I'm just thinking that it's coming from an arborist. It's impressive.
Yeah, I can reach out to Nate and the other arborists that actually just trim the trees at the treatment plant and see if one of them might write up something for us.
If you're looking for a third disinterested party, I know the Caltrans arborist in the area might be willing to do it on a side job basis.
Okay. I'll look into it and see if I can get somebody to write something. The next thing on the reportable items was the additional projects, which we discussed earlier. We do have, I think it's 11 of the 12 blind flanges that I needed. I haven't received the caps or the plugs yet. That's also waiting. A new hydrant for the damaged one on Del Rio. Those are all just parts that we're awaiting.
All right.
So if we get enough of them, we can start doing some of these projects, but definitely I don't see us completing all of them in this fiscal year. Okay. Next fiscal year.
And those are the ones we set aside, right?
No, the additional projects, unless I'm speaking wrong, it doesn't include the Borough Court,
right?
The other ones that were on there earlier. It the additional projects, as far as I knew, were only the ones we were trying to do of that separation from old pipe to new pipe.
Oh, okay.
Then the couple services that were still missing in Blue Lakes.
All right. Thank you. Okay, so I believe the next item is the budget. And I know we're all excited about that.
Yeah.
So can I point out one mistake we did on the budget already that I didn't even look at before was my payroll. It is actually still on there as being Dave's number. It is not what I am paid. So let's, that one is going to decrease dramatically.
I think the dollar amount will be, what, 96?
Somewhere about that range.
96.8, I think. 90
something.
So is that for the 2022 version? It would be 96.8.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Just verifying.
Yeah, from the 152,266 to 96.8, I think.
Okay, so that drops it about 54,000. I can't do math without a calculator.
All right.
First slide rule. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. So I don't know how we'd like to start this discussion. We have about 30 minutes until we lose Andy.
So the only thing I know that we're going to change right off the bat is I can just go back to the old budget numbers and get rid of that 12%. So nobody sees that until we have our meeting, get our AWWA book and decide on what those percentages should be. And we'll add a line item for the overtime. That will be the only other one I can come up with right now.
If we do that, then we will drastically need to reduce the income or add a large amount to another line item further down the budget. I would like to see at least 7% there and just do 7% as a placeholder and balance around the budget with the 7%. Whether we get 7 or 3 or 2, leave the 7 as the placeholder for the budget. That would allow us to pass a budget quicker.
Yeah, I don't know where you got the 7% number from, Lee, but I would be in favor of the thing I hate to do is to get into a compensation discussion without all of the data at hand. You know, just for the board, you know, Tom's aware of this and Bruce is aware of it. You know, I did some survey work of national surveys and the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported in the last 2 weeks, or at least through the month of October. And employers were planning at that point were increases of 3.5% to 4.5%. I know that the department, the CPI index came out yesterday that shows a 6.2% year over year increase. So, you know, without the AWWA information at hand, which is obviously going to be dated because their surveys are conducted in the first half of the year and their analysis is done in the second half. My best guess, without getting too far ahead of, you know, our compensation line item would be to probably think about 7% as the target number. It might end up being slightly less. It might end up being slightly more, but I think at this point, given what we know about inflation and what's happening with, you know, the supply chain and logistics, yeah, issues globally, you know, inflation is going to be with us. And, you know, not that we're ever going to make up 100% of inflation numbers, because the other factor that plays into this is the relative comparison of our current pay levels for our employees vis-a-vis what those are in the community. And part of the community is the water world. So I don't know. Enough said.
CPI is at 6.2. That's been announced. Social Security is at 6.1. That's been announced. The something greater than 6%. Certainly what
And may I add that the payroll for Water Masters, you only have one that has been there the entire year. You have one that just got off his 6-month probation, and you have another one that is still within his 6-month probation. So as far as the entirety of saying a 12% or 7% payroll for the Water Masters is going to still be probably a little on the high side.
Yeah, well, what you need to do is annualize the wages for those three individuals, and then we'll look at what the appropriate percent of increase year over year should be.
Okay.
So if we could do the 7%, that would be awesome. That would get us to closer to a budget before the end of next or before the beginning of next year.
Yeah, but we're not proposing from what we're suggesting, reducing at this point anyway, the current budget, but just breaking out the overtime so that the wage and salary line is much more, there's much more clarity around what's in that number as opposed to, the all of the various pieces. Okay, Sharon, go ahead.
You're a hard act to follow, Andy.
Well, I do this shit for a living, so.
Right, I know. We appreciate all your efforts on our behalf. You're so knowledgeable about all this. I was only on the receiving end of the raises, never on the deciding. So, I know we touched on it originally in a previous discussion. Do we want to look further at the income or does it just start there?
And see the income basically offsets the expenses. So the expenses, if you want to do an increase line item for the base rates, then that could be fixed. We're leaving, obviously, the 427,555 has to be for the USDA. And then the others are simply historical analysis and input of figures from what we have seen historically. That was said poorly.
Right.
So Sharon, let me give you a way forward because when it comes to the income, the long range planning committee still has some work to do. And I don't know, Tom, what your thinking is on the turnaround of our final recommendation to the board, but we have a little bit of work yet to do there. So my bias would be to look at the general overall increase to the rest of the budget, which is over 100, I think, I forget what the percentage was. It's a significant increase, would be to dive into what's driving those increases and are those increases appropriate or not.
And you mean
if I may,
You mean in the expenses, right?
Yes.
Because those would drive it.
We could figure out if we want to do the 2% increase on the base rate. That would be important today. And what we want to do with the water usage cost. Those two figures would be invaluable today.
Well, how does the LRPC...
Well, I think that's an LRPC issue, and we haven't resolved that, Tom, have we?
Not entirely. I got feedback from you and Jeff and Craig, so I could put an email out just with that same document that I provided before and just get a response back from the rest of the committee to provide their inputs. And then I can present those to the committee and we can vote on an overall consensus for our recommendation.
An answer on the water usage rates? the 190, the 175, the 160?
Right.
Okay.
That okay. That would handle that area.
And the base rate.
Tom, do you want to, as chair, the committee, just make a decree today that gives Lee? We're looking at this 608 number and $1.75 or $1.70, right?
Yeah. So based on the responses so far, it sounds like the consensus is for the $1.75.
Mm-hmm. And the base rate of what, 608?
608.
Base rate of 8 of 600.
No, I think it was higher.
608.
Yeah. So I think it's currently 588, and we were looking at almost
604.
604. 604. Yeah, 604.
And that could be voted on today if you wanted to bring it to a vote.
Well, I shouldn't speak. I can only speak for me. I think I'd want to see the whole budget before I voted on the final rate. But I don't know how the rest of the board feels about it. I think you can run the numbers, but I don't know that I'm just one person. I am not.
Well, I think that's very valid because we're at this point kind of piecemealing the budget and. We don't know what the final salary numbers are going, wage and salary numbers are going to be, which obviously then drives insurance and workers' comp costs, social security costs, et cetera, et cetera. So there's money floating out there that, could be dropped to the bottom line, but we have no way to calculate that today.
Right.
Okay. But as a placeholder, I would be comfortable, Tom, if... others are in saying that, the base rate is looking like 608 with $1.75 consumptive rate.
Yeah, it was 604, was that example.
So yeah. Andy wants to be charged 608, so we make sure that he's always charged that amount, okay?
No, that sounds fine with me.
Yeah, I think
that's a board. It needs to be a board vote.
Well, we're not finalizing it, Lee. That's a planning number.
Okay. All right. I will put those numbers in. Is there anything in the expenses that anyone would like to talk about?
Well, I'd like to understand what's driving the, other than payroll, what's driving the increases of something more than 2 or 3%. And unfortunately, I only have about 20 minutes left.
Do you have a specific one that we might be able to answer? Or?
Well, when I look at the bottom line on, it's kind of hard. Total expenses are going from a year-end estimate of basically $1.1 million to $1.66 million. So that's a $600,000 increase. So what's driving that? That's huge.
Income. The income is driving this. We have to come to a zero balance on our income and expenses.
So basically what you're saying is all the numbers in the 2022 preliminary budget column are funny money numbers.
No, we researched. This is not funny money. We did a lot of research to come up with this. Did we increase some a bit to come to zero balance for the budget to bring this to you, to the board? Yes, we did the 12. When we were finished with figuring out what we would have for the majority of the expenses, we were left increasing the payroll by 12% in order to balance the budget to what we have income wise.
Can I say something? So one item that's not in the 2021 budget was the $427,000.
Oh, it's correct. In there.
No, it's in there. Under the final.
under the completion.
Correct. We don't pay it out yet. About
the 1.1 million is not in there.
If it was 1.5, correct.
So if you added that in.
I was just going to say, if you put that aside, as I showed on page 25 in my charts, that difference is about 140,000 if you take into account that 427,555.
And then we took out about 50,000 for Tyler, right?
Correct. Correct.
So.
And we'll bring it down from the 12 to the 7. And then with those additional adjustments, we'll look at what our income is and then adjust income accordingly. Research went into this to figure it out.
Well, I'm not suggesting that you know, you didn't research and you just picked numbers, but you know, I realize you have to show a balanced budget of income versus expenses, but based on what you set out, excuse me for a second.
So one year, Lee, you, the water company put together a list of, right now we have the payroll in like five different categories, right? Because it's under source of supply. Maybe we had, if there's a way to pull them out, so we just look at payroll and overtime total with all those categories.
Sure. Let me change this to 7% on the individual source of supply, water treatment, distribution. And I will also correct Tyler's general manager. And then I will put together a spreadsheet that puts it all together. So you'll be able to see Water Master's total, Tyler and office.
Right.
As
and then
one
and obviously with the taxes and insurance that goes with it, because that's all kind of combined, right?
Yes. And I do have that. Yes. Yeah. And then like Andy was saying before, reducing the payroll would also reduce the workers' comp, the and a couple other areas. Payroll taxes would be reduced. So there's a couple other areas that when reducing the payroll would reduce other line items. So let me get that together for the board. As long as there's no nothing glaring that you needed an answer to, that sounds like we could move forward.
Well, actually, it doesn't. So okay. You're going to reduce basically the expenses by probably some $70,000.
Not more, yes.
which, so income based on what you've proposed here is, what, 1.659?
Yes.
So that's going to be a fairly static number. That's not going to move around that much. So in order to balance the expense part of the budget, you're going to have to add back some $70,000 of additional expenses somewhere.
Yes.
And maybe what that should be is a reserve funding line item.
Okay. I can't make it reserve, but I can do a line item. I'll put a line item in there. Yes.
You can't do a reserve line item?
Reserve line items are not usually put into a budget. They are a result of your year-end budget. But we can bump a couple of the other line items, pad them, if you will, to create a budget that is balanced.
Well, I personally I don't like that approach because at the end of the day, there's no accountability for how the budget's spent. If you've got a lot of padding here, there, and everywhere that can't be identified, so
let me make the corrections that the board has come up with today, and then send it back to you with our preliminary, with not a balanced budget, with what the preliminary income would be, with a 2% and 1.75 for metered water, and then reducing the salaries, and we'll see where we are, and we can go from there.
Okay.
And I'll get that out Monday.
And will this go to the LRPC first? Is that the idea? So they can take a look at it, or?
Whole board.
The whole board. Okay. Does that sound acceptable, Andy?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay, let me do that.
Because I think, you know, at the end of the day, we need to see a realistic representation of what the budget numbers are. And, right. You know, you've got plug numbers, obviously, and I'm not finding fault with that, or I don't intend to. But you know, it has to be realistic. It has to be identifiable so it becomes manageable.
Let me get that to you Monday, and then we'll work on it from there.
Okay.
Awesome. And then at some point, the LRPC is going to meet to confirm rates and stuff.
Well, the LRPC can meet, but then what they do is simply report to the board and have the board decide if that's agreeable. This is what we came up with. Does the board like this?
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's what we've done historically.
Yes, yes. So you think they need to meet again to decide the 2% and the 1.75?
Well, I think you're still going to give us a budget based on what we've discussed, but
that's what I'll do.
I just want to make sure that I understand that the LRPC still plans to meet to verify everything. I'm not trying to force them to meet, but.
Well, I think, Tom, that I would defer to you. I'm just a member of the committee. You're the chair, but you've only heard from, you know, three of the five members.
Right. My plan is to resend out that information, discuss the what's been discussed here as far as the base rate and metered rate, and get input from the remaining committee members, and then we can bring that back to the board.
Which means Joe Morgan needs to respond.
Right.
Is Joe still on?
Hello, Joe. Hello, Joe.
He's there.
This is Rangoon calling Joe Morgan.
He's usually more verbal than this.
Well,
he just went off the air.
Yeah, I'll.
Okay, I'll get this out to everybody. Tom can get his out to everybody, and we'll meet interimly. That works.
No, hey, Tom. I was unable to respond to you. I was in Mexico, you know, and it was all classified information going over the wire.
There you go.
Okay, well, I'll be sending that out, and Joe, you can respond to that email, and along with a couple others that didn't respond yet.
Yeah, we had a family reunion in Puerto Vallarta, and so we were not doing any business.
I don't blame you.
So more than happy to respond when I get a chance.
Okay.
Good. You're muted.
Sorry about that.
All right.
So does that?
I'll also need a response from John too.
Okay.
But I'll get that out in the email.
Okay.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Ready. So I guess my question is, are we going to need another meeting in December to approve a budget?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
All right. So can we choose the date or now? Or do you want to just propose a date later? I don't know. We have 10
depends
minutes.
On when, it depends on when LRPC can meet, okay. How soon they can, and then we could meet immediately afterwards.
That's fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take too long to get a consensus back from the long-range committee.
Okay.
Yeah, so Saturday, December 11 or 18 work for me.
The 11th works really good for me. But I don't know about anybody else.
The 11th.
Put that out there.
11th or 18th works for me.
The 4th or the 18th?
11th.
Can't do the 11th, John?
No. I'm predestined.
Could we get your thoughts in answer to Tom's email he's about to send out? And you could do it in...
We don't necessarily have to do it on a Sunday or a Saturday. We can do it during the week. We can do it in the evening, whatever works right for us. I mean, we just need to get, we'll do that LRPC meeting. And then as soon after that, we can get our documents together and get this preliminary budget somewhat closer. I think that we could schedule a date, and it really doesn't have to be a Saturday. So whatever would work for all involved, really.
I agree with that. It could be
an evening meeting. Works well for me.
Yeah. No, you're best after 2 o'clock, right, Andy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of my work now is, you know, on the East Coast or internationally. So.
Okay.
Okay.
So if it's okay with everybody, I think that we can wait for Tom to get out here, and we'll have our LRPC meeting and discuss that. And then I'll get back to Sharon with us being finished with that. And then we can send something out to try to make something work for, we'll shoot for that mid part of December. Any day of the week is, or weekend would be work for me.
All right. That sounds great, Tyler. Thank you.
Okay.
Could Andy, Craig, Tyler, and I meet in that sometime too to discuss payroll?
Bruce, not Craig.
I mean, Bruce, sorry.
Okay.
I had given Andy an email, and I'll send something out to them, a spreadsheet that I'm working up in the next couple weeks, and let them know kind of where we're at with each individual. And then I told Andy I'm going to keep calling AWWA here weekly, so hopefully I can get that book as soon as possible.
Awesome. And
hopefully it'll be before the mid part of December, but that's what she originally had told me.
Yeah, I'm kind of dead in the water until I'm able to get my hands on that survey, Lee. So, you know, meeting, you know, I'm not opposed to it, but, you know, there's really nothing to meet on at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll get you what I have, Andy, and then I'll, like I say, try to get that AWWA book as soon as possible so we can meet up and discuss everything.
Okay.
Okay.
No barking.
So I heard a motion before, but no one seconded it, Andy.
Seconded it.
Oh, Bruce seconded it. Okay, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No one's opposed.
No one's opposed.
All right. Thank you so much. See you next month.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Adios.
Mm-hmm.